This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone. It's really nice to have you with us again for another edition of the program. Paulette McQuarrie is taking a few weeks off, so I'll be flying solo. Coming up on the program today in lead up to the SWL Fest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania, we're going to be finding out from you, the listener, what got you interested in international broadcasting. We're going to be joined on the line by Mark Cody, a member of the DX Ontario Association. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, and as Pink would say, let's get the party started. Hand me a drink, guys. Come on, over here now. But first, we take a look at some of the headlines happening in the world of media. The Japanese government is running a rather original project against piracy on the internet. It is releasing two popular file-sharing networks between the 23rd and 29th of January. A series of files made to look like popular TV drama videos, but which will make a big surprise to the unsuspecting user. Named after some popular TV programs, the files, when opened, are alerting users of popular file-sharing networks Winnie and Share to stop handling pirated media on the web. The message is that both uploading and downloading copyrighted protected media is illegal in Japan. The initiative belongs to Japan's Ministry of Internal Affairs and Communications, and is supposed to trace the future behavior of users who download the fake TV shows. It is yet unclear if any users caught in the act will be prosecuted. According to the Japanese press, about 150,000 people in the country are using the networks Winnie and Share every day. The BBC has announced an extension of its deal with SFR across its satellite and fiber networks. The award-winning international news and information channel is now available on SFR Satellite 9 Box. Formerly included in the package Le Boutique Selection, BBC World News became available last month on 9 Box. Following this deal, it means that BBC News 24 will reach more than 16 million homes across France. A 10-year tax holiday, duty exemptions, and the granting of infrastructure status are among the proposals reportedly being considered by the Indian broadcasting industry by the government, reported RapidTVNews.com. The Information and Broadcasting Ministry is considering demands for support from the cable industry after it introduced legislation requiring the digitization of India's vast cable TV network. According to the Hindustan Times, in addition to an extended tax holiday under Section 81A of the Income Tax Act to help offset the cost of introducing new broadcasting technology, cable operators may be granted infrastructure status in the same way as the telecommunications sector. Around 68 million set-top boxes are expected to be required to support the nationwide digitalization of India's cable networks. The Vatican's news website is getting between 8,000 and 10,000 hits a day, with peaks up to 16,000 hits over the Christmas period. The website, which brings together all the Vatican's official communications and news from the Catholic Church around the world, was launched in June. The data was announced by Archbishop Claudio Maria Cerelli, head of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, at the Vatican press conference. The Archbishop said the average time visitors spend on the websites in English, Italian, and Spanish was around 2 minutes, which he said showed those consulting it were not doing so by mistake, but were reading some of its content. Almost a third of visitors, 27%, were from the United States, followed by browsers from Italy, Germany, and Spain. There were also many visitors from Canada, Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina. He added, most of the visits to the website were through social media networks, with 65% from Facebook and 30% from Twitter. And finally, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is launching an exclusive TV show, The World Tomorrow, which we broadcast on Russia Today. The show, which will begin in March, will be a series of 10 26-minute talk shows. Russia Today, in its press release, said Julian Assange, the project creator and host of the program, will meet with politicians, revolutionaries, all those, in his opinion, will be shaping the future. If you want more information about these and other stories, I invite you to check out the Media Network blog from Radio Netherlands Worldwide, produced by Andy Sennett. You can find a link to them at our own website, www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll see a link listed at the bottom of the page. And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, broadcasting worldwide on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in North America, and Sky Digital. You can also find us online, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. Many of you who are shortwave fans may have noticed something unusual, and that was a blackout of the bands. This solar storm, which occurred earlier this week, just didn't affect HF, but also satellite communications. So joining us now is our own propagation guru, Dan Hensley, to tell us a little bit more about what happened this week. Dan, I want to ask you a question. This week we saw a lot of solar activity. There was a lot of interruptions on the HF bands, but not just the HF bands. In fact, this week, earlier this week, I was watching television at home, one of the satellite channels, and for about 2 hours, the signal kept breaking up, and I was getting pixels, then it was fine, and then there was freeze frame and everything else. What happened here? Was this caused by a very large geomagnetic storm?
Actually, it was. It was a result of an M-class solar flare that was predicted last week on the Media Network Plus show during the propagation forecast, and that M-class flare actually turned into a major solar storm. It interrupted, actually, frequencies, as far as I'm aware, between 14 megahertz, which is a 20-meter band, as far up as at least 1.2 gigahertz. I'm aware of several amateur radio repeaters in the United States that were having trouble effectively hearing signals, especially one in Phoenix, Arizona. I was listening to via CQ100. And there was an RF link put up there by someone associated with that group. And as these guys were going back and forth in the mobile trying to talk to each other, they're using 20, 30, 50 watts, and nobody can hear each other into the repeater. They're saying, the repeater's really noisy. We don't know why. This is really odd. And this is a UHF system. So I start looking around. I get on Facebook. And I'm looking around other places, and I run across it. Here we go. There was a solar storm.
One of the things that I noticed is that stations that were, that for me are normally extremely clear, let's say like Radio Australia or Radio Japan, it was almost like silence, just as if they'd turned off the transmitters.
Yeah, that'll happen when a solar magnetic storm actually interrupts the radio propagation, and that's effectively what actually happened. It was so strong. It was like when I looked, it was about R2, maybe heading into an R3, and it can do that. It's like effectively throwing a blanket or plugging up a hole in your sink. It just stops the flow of everything.
And that was Dan Hensley. Dan will be back later on in the show to let us know what we can expect over the next 7 days.
Media Network Plus.
Yes. Yes, the radio's stripping. I'm sure that some people might get excited by that. Anyway, as you may or may not know, I will be attending this year's SWL Winterfest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. This year marks the 25th anniversary. So I thought that, you know, during the month of February, we would bring you a couple of one-on-one interviews with SWLs and what made them interested in the hobby. The first one is Mark Cody. He lives in Ontario, Canada, and is a member of the DX Association of Ontario. Mark was also the winner of the PCJ contest that we had for members of the Happy Station Club, and he received a Texan PL660. So we called him up at his home in Ontario, and this is what he had to say. Mark, you've been an SWL for many, many years now. What got you hooked as an SWL? Was it something that you came across by accident, or were you sort of led into that direction by, let's say, certain family members?
My late father was a ham in the early part of the century. His call letters were 3LJ, so that was before he had VE and VA. I'm the last of seven kids, and I'm the only one that showed an interest in radio. So he's the one that told me all about it.
You know, it's interesting because you've been around for a while, and it's amazing. Do you look at, let's say, technology today and think back, wow, look at how and where we've come to?
Oh yeah, for sure. From the tube sets and the boat anchors, and I've owned enough of them that if I had a dime for every radio that I drilled over, I'd be a rich man.
But when you think back, let's say, of all the receivers that you've had, is there something, let's say, about those old vacuum tube receivers that you miss?
I think it's the audio, because it's the same with amplifiers. Like today's solid state can't beat a good old tube driven audio amplifier. So there's something about that. Now, granted, you didn't have the competing stations back then, like with CRI or all over the map. So the selectivity wasn't a big factor back then.
You know, recently there was somebody I was speaking to, and he started listening way back in the 1940s. And he got his first digital receiver in the 1990s. And he said, okay, granted, let's say, he said the digital receiver didn't have the same sound as the big Telefunken, you know, grand radio. But he says tuning to a station was much easier, just being able to punch in the, you know, the frequency, and that's it.
Yeah, for sure. They are still making sets with half-decent audio. Like, I like the audio from the Eaton E1. I'm presently using the new Elenco, the DXR8. It's got fairly good audio.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also have a couple of older radios, like the Panasonic RF2200, which is really good audio. And then I've got an old Drake SPR4, which isn't great audio, but it still pulls the signals out.
Now, you know, back in those days when you started as an SWL, most of the receivers were either made in Europe. They were made in Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, the United Kingdom. There was also a number of models that came from Japan. And in the last maybe 25 years, we've seen some coming from Japan, but now increasingly more from China. China, a company called Texan, is the largest manufacturer of shortwave radio sets in the world. And I remember the first Chinese-made SW receiver that I bought in 1996. I have to be honest, I thought it was a piece of junk. It was absolutely terrible. But when I think about, let's say, the products that Texan has been putting out for, let's say, the last 5 or 6 years, I'm really amazed.
Well, you can go back a little further than that when Grundy came out with the Satellite 800, which was a Texan product, and that was in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I had that for several years until a hydro strike took it out. And that was, of course, then there was a lot of Drake technology in there as well.
Now, when you started listening, what were you mostly listening to?
I was listening to European broadcasters and tropical band stations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was tickled pink when I could hear Australia.
You know, there's something that that I've heard a debate going on within the SWL community, because from what I've seen for the last 20 years, or 25, 30 years from when I started listening, there seems to be this kind of a tension almost between SWLs and DXers. Would you agree with that?
That tension, I think, is a lot less these days,
mm-hmm.
because there seems to be more people into a shortwave listening than DXing. I've always considered myself a hybrid, where I enjoy the DXing, but I also like sitting back and listening to programs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a few years ago, I was speaking to an SWL from Australia, and he said what used to annoy him is, he said, sometimes people would put him in the same category as as some people that say that would just write a station, send a reception report, and never listen again just to receive something. And he said, I used to hate being put in that category.
I knew a fair number of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them who would just continually report just to get the latest edition of the QSL card. I dropped QSLing many, many years ago, because there was one man that I met through the Ontario DX Association who basically either tape recorded or just wrote stuff down. He said, my logbook is my verification, and I certainly ended up saving a lot on postage.
Now, for today, we've seen a lot of cutbacks that have taken place, especially targeting North America. BBC World Service no longer targets their broadcasts there. Swiss Radio International, Deutsche Welle, Radio Nederland, there are still some on the air. Is it still easy to find stations to be able to listen to?
Well, you have to adjust your time. Like, I find, like, with Radio Netherlands and Deutsche Welle, because I'm now retired, I can listen to them in the afternoon for their Africa service, and I hear them quite well. It's the evenings where I notice you can go a couple hours and then wondering, like, who's on the air anymore?
Mm-hmm. But let's say mornings and afternoons are still good times then.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I wake up with Radio Australia every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to hear them here in the evening, but they're there in the morning. And if you want DX, you can pick up some Thailand and a few other countries, and then, like say, the mid to late afternoon.
Now let me guess to see if my memory serves me correct, but the Radio Australia frequency, does that happen to be 9580?
Yeah,
it is.
Then, and then at 1400 is for an extra hour, so I'll switch over to 9590.
Mm-hmm.
But that 9580 frequency, that's been there since the dawn of time.
Well, you know, Nigel Holmes, who's the frequency manager of Radio Australia, when I was speaking to him, I said, 9580, I said, you target that towards the Pacific, but I said, it does. Depending, say, 90% of the time, depending on propagation, gives an excellent signal into North America. Had you ever thought of changing? And he said, well, for all the time that I've been at Radio Australia, he said, we targeted towards the Pacific because, as most Radio Australia transmissions, but he said, we knew that it got into North America, which is the only reason why we keep that frequency and we don't change it.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I sent an email once to Saturday Night Country, and I got a nice reply back that Felicity Urquhart was quite pleased that I'm listening to her every Saturday morning.
You know, not too long ago, I was talking to a friend of mine on the west coast of Canada, and we were talking on Facebook, and I was saying to him, I said, okay, tell me if you can pick up this frequency. Tell me if you can pick up this one. And he was doing the same. And it was interesting, because I believe it was Radio New Zealand. I gave him a Radio New Zealand frequency, which is targeted towards the Pacific, which here in Taiwan, we cannot pick up. But he was able to get it on the west coast of Canada, which is quite amazing.
Our founder of the ODXA, Harold Sellers, he's since moved out to the left coast, and it's amazing some of the stuff he picks up from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been a member of the Ontario DX Club?
30+ years.
30+ years. And is the Ontario DX Club only have members in Canada or also in other parts of the world as well?
Well, we eliminated membership a couple of years ago, so everything's free on the net, so you don't have to be a member. You just log on or just go to odxa.on.ca, and you can access our magazine. And we accept, like I handled the international loggings column, and we accept loggings from all over the world.
You know, you think, because there's another organization in Canada called the Canadian International DX Club, that Sheldon Harvey, I don't know if he's still running it, but he was running it for a long time. Was there ever like a friction between the two clubs?
Not really. The only, I remember about 25, 30 years ago, there was a policy that if you were an editor for one, you couldn't do the same with the other club. It was just, there was a distinction. Like, if you're on the board of directors of one, you couldn't be, you know, on the other. But aside from that, it was a fairly amicable arrangement.
Now, Mark, you live just outside of Toronto in Peterborough, Ontario. Is it easy, let's say I was to head to Peterborough or head to Toronto, is it easy to find SWL receivers in those two places?
For sure. You've got, there's two ham radio stores, Durham Radio, which is in a Toronto suburb called Whitby, and there's Radio World, which is in the north end of Toronto. They carry like Eaton and ICOM products.
Now, you just mentioned a moment ago that you've collected so many receivers over the years. If I was to, let's say, have a mental picture in my head, would my mental picture be just shelves and of rows and rows and rows of radios?
Not that bad. there's a friend of mine in London, Robert Ross. His basement's like that. I've basically traded over the years, so I don't have that many still. But I've owned quite a few over the years.
And if I was to ask you right now, which is your favorite one at this very moment, the one that you're using the most right now? What is it?
The Elenco DXR8, mm-hmm. Because it has the 12 kilohertz IQ output, so that I can listen to DRM.
And what is DRM selection like where you are?
Not great. Spain REE has a transmitter in Costa Rica that has a DRM program, but I'm probably going to have to do a lot of work on my antennas in the spring, because there is one guy I know, he occasionally picks up New Zealand's DRM program.
Mark, thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us today. It's always interesting to hear from other SWLs and how they got interested in shortwave, as well as their stories surrounding it. Thank you very much for taking some time out today.
All right, take care.
That was Mark Cody in Ontario, Canada, talking about his history on how he got interested in shortwave radio. Well, speaking of shortwave propagation, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, was terrible this week. What can we expect over the next 7 days? Well, Dan Hensley is back with this week's Propagation Report.
The 10.7 centimeter flux will come first on January 28th and 29th, the 10.7 centimeter flux of 140. January 30th through February 2nd, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 135. On February 3rd, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 140. An A index of 5 from January 28th through February 1st. February 2nd and 3rd, an A index of 8. A KP index of 2 will be seen the entire week, almost, from January 28th through February 1st. February 2nd and 3rd will see a KP index of 3. The massive geomagnetic storm we recently experienced has had some after effects on the sun. We only see four sunspot groups, 1401, 1402, 1405, and 1408. We can expect a low level of solar activity with likely M-class flares until sunspot regions 1401 and 02 depart on January 28th. It's entirely possible for us to see quiet to unsettled conditions until February 2nd or 3rd as another geo-effective event becomes likely after that or around that date. Overall, propagation looks anywhere between minimal and hit or miss. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. At the beginning of the program, I mentioned the SWL Winterfest happening the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of March will be taking place in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. If you want more information, you can go to their website and register, swlfest.com. That's swlfest.com. And I will be there, so do come and say hello. And if you do, don't be shy, because I may have a microphone and you may have to be interviewed. Anyway, that's it, and that's all we have time for. If you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can download this program again, as well as the past editions, by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. So, on behalf of vacationing Paulette McQuarrie, Dan Hensley, this is Keith Parent in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, take care, 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.